Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another special edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show as we will review the 2024 U.S. Open Cup fourth round proper. And as we get ready to talk about American soccer once again here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, we had some amazing games. And I will admit, I thought we weren't going to have anything exciting this Open Cup, but I was proven wrong, and I'm glad I was proven wrong. And I'll tell you why I'm glad I'm proven wrong. Because, number one, of the way that Major League Soccer attempted to torpedo the Open Cup tournament for 2024, how they feel or they believe that it means nothing to them. Yeah, Don Garber's going to say that, of course, there is priority in the Open Cup, but, you know, but we need to find ways to go and make it better. But the reality is they don't really want to. And it's really a shame that Major League Soccer has to find a way to end or at least make that attempt to not have their first division teams in the Open Cup. And I've written recently on Beyond the 90, brand new, about concerns for the future of the Open Cup. And, of course, got some excerpts and quotes from Commissioner Don Garber from an article by CBS Sports' Chuck Booth that are in there, those quotes from Chuck Booth's article. And, you know, it's just really, really disheartening to see those comments made by Don Garber, Commissioner of Major League Soccer, who is a member of the Board of Governors of U.S. soccer, because once again, it is just very, very difficult to see all this rhetoric going back and forth, the continued slapping in the face of every American soccer fan and every American soccer player and all the clubs below MLS. To just find a way to torpedo this tournament. And it's just absolutely disheartening. But you know what else is disheartening? When you have a club like the Houston Dynamo, who, of course, they are defending MLS Cup champions, and defending Open Cup champions, and glad that during the hubbub of the eight MLS clubs to come in to play in the Open Cup. Now, apparently, the reason, you know, they want to defend their title, and that removed the Red Bulls from taking their spot to be into the eight clubs to be in the Open Cup. Now, let me just say this. Of course, I'm disheartened that the Red Bulls are not, their first division team did not be in the Open Cup, but I will gladly substitute them to allow the Houston Dynamo, who, of course, did qualify for the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but also said they want to defend their title. And I respect the Houston Dynamo for wanting that. So, therefore, I'm not that distraught. Because, once again, it's not the Red Bulls' problem. It's not their fault. It is the fault of the front office of Major League Soccer. It is their fault. Their fault for allowing this to happen. But, you know, you also have to say that, you know, when you've got a club like the Houston Dynamo who are defending Open Cup champions, and they took on one of the best in the USL Championship League in Detroit City FC, and you lose to them in penalties, well then, all you can really say is that, can you just, you know, be a little bit of a gracious loser? Can you? Can you, Ben? Well, Benny, can you? We all know they're second division. And yeah, they got you on your best day. But come on now, really? Did you have to go that route? Did you really have to go and act like that after you lost? The better team won, plain and simple. Plain and simple, the better team won. It was Detroit City. On their best day, they got you. That's all. That's all you got to say. It was their day. They got us. We should have done better. We couldn't. And that's the end of it. Should have won the game. Didn't in regulation. Could have gotten that big goal in extra time. It didn't happen. That's all. Show some humility. But nope. Just, you know, it's just a shame, Ben, that you have to go out there and basically tell everybody, yep, whatever. Just a shame. Just an absolute shame. I know you don't like to lose to a second division club. No one likes to – no first division club likes to lose to a second division club. I understand that. Completely understand that. Completely understand. But, you know, show some heart at least, or at least show some humility on why you lost. I don't think they're asking for that much. But what else is new? That was a hell of a match. We had a hell of a couple of matches. Also, happy to see New Mexico United. Also upsetting Real Salt Lake in their matchup. It was unbelievable what we saw out there. And we also saw some MLS sides really finding ways to get out there and, you know, making sure they don't get eliminated from cup competition. But I'll say this. These Open Cup games have not disappointed me at all. Nope. They have not disappointed me whatsoever. And I'm just happy that we're getting some fabulous games in these rounds. Everyone is not giving up. They're going out there. They're working their tails off. They're fighting for every inch of grass out there, and it's just absolutely fantastic. I'm happy to see that, to be honest with you. Because it's easy to say, well, if they're not going to do it, we're not going to do it. It's easy to go that route. But not so, folks. We're getting some cup sets here. We're getting some fantastic action all over the place. And I'm very happy to see that. And I'm also happy to see MLS clubs being involved in this Open Cup as well. Not all the clubs, obviously, are sitting back. I'm glad to see that. But once again, it has to be said, U.S. soccer must, and I stress this, they must make sure that MLS does not pull this crap again. You know, this is if I was president of U.S. soccer, and usually I don't like to, you know, I don't like putting my two cents in, but I don't want to, you know, do like a role play or anything like that. But here's what I would do if I was president of U.S. soccer. Because you got to show a little bit of backbone here. Very simply put, you got to show some backbone. And this is what I would do. if MLS, if I was president of U.S. Soccer and MLS pulled this off while I was running the governing body of the sport in this country, this is what I would do. I would inform Major League Soccer and at the same time have a press conference and inform the soccer community, the American soccer community, that MLS is in violation of the Pro League standard and after, you know, their second attempt to railroad the Open Cup, I would have said that Major League Soccer is in they're in violation of the handbook and the rules of the U.S. Soccer Federation. Because it does say, and I've been writing about it on Beyond the 90, in their bylaws of U.S. Soccer, that all First Division MLS teams must participate in the Open Cup so that they are eligible to participate in the CONCACAF Champions League / Champions Cup, whatever it is now, the Champions tournament that these First Division clubs get to qualify for International Cup competition play. I would have, and I'm being honest, this is what I would do if I would do it, you know, if I was president of U.S. Soccer, I would fine Major League Soccer $100 million. Now, you can scoff at me, you can laugh at me, and that's fine, but the point I'm making is this. I would fine them for this attempt, for what they've done, to undermine the principles of U.S. soccer and the game as a whole. I would fine them $100 million. And if it happens again, I would up the ante to $200 million. Because this is a direct violation, Pro League standards, but the bylaws and the rules of governing the game in this country in the United States. And I would tell Don Garber that if this happens again, it's going to get worse. Much worse. Because you got to put your foot down. And because of what happened with the Open Cup and MLS, look at what the Premier League did on replays for the FA Cup with, now, let me just say this. That was a direct violation with the FA Cup. There's a difference. And why is there a difference? It's very simply put is this. The English FA went hand in hand with the Premier League. This was MLS going against U.S. soccer and forcing U.S. soccer, forcing them to tie their hands and to bend their rules for them. This was U.S. soccer needs MLS, and I understand that. But when will U.S. soccer have the cojones to stand up to them and say, no, cannot be allowed? When will that happen? And the truth is, at this point in time, currently, while they did show it back in December last year, it reared its ugly head and it returned. And they cowered and gave up. That's the point. Either stick to your guns, or find a way to get your point across. Because I'm telling you right now, this cannot be done. It just can't. can't. They cannot continue to do this. They just can't. And I'm sorry. They must find a way. They must find a way to inform MLS that cannot happen anymore. Because this is not about what's good for MLS. This is about what's good for the game in the United States. I don't care if the FMF shelved the Copa MX, the Copa Mexico, because the Liga MX decided they didn't want to be a part of it anymore. Okay? That's not our concern. That's not where we should care for as American soccer fans. Now, if you're a supporter of Liga MX, of a Liga MX club, that's your concern. But if you're an American soccer fan, that should not be your concern. So all I can tell you is this. It's time for once, just for once, let's have American soccer do what's right. Let's have them do what's right, folks. And let's make sure. Let's just make sure. That our American soccer leagues, they go out there and they do the job and they find a way to get it done the right way for American soccer. And that is making sure that this never, ever happens again. Okay? It's time to make sure this never, ever happens again. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a great show for you tonight as we're reviewing the U.S. Open Cup fourth round matches. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a look at some of these great matches that were played. And we are getting ready for my first guest tonight. I thought it was over down in Tampa. I thought it was over with basically no more podcasting, but it looks like
7-3-5-0.
Oop, and it looks like he's not there yet. Waiting for my first guest tonight, Matthew Cox from the Unused Subs podcast. They're back. He did tell me he was running a little late, so hopefully he'll be ready to go soon as we get ready to talk about that matchup. And I'll tell you, that one, I thought it was over and done with. I really did. I thought it was over and done with that game. You're up 4-0. It looks like everything is copacetic. The Tampa Bay Rowdies were going to move on. And all of a sudden, here comes Birmingham Legion. All of a sudden, here they come. But before we even get to the Birmingham Legion goals, let me just say this. I got to say, it was a great bunt. It was a great game from the Tampa side. From the 25th minute all the way to the 79th, Damian Rivera getting the opening goal to make it 1-0. And then Cal Jennings goes on a tear, getting a hat trick. And then all of a sudden, it's just amazing to see what's going to happen. And we're going to get on Matthew Cox in just a moment. And let's see if we can get him on right now. As we're calling it, looks like we got Matthew Cox on right now from the Unused Subs podcast. And there it is. Matt, welcome back. I thought your podcasting days were over.
Well, you know, I spirit of the Jesse Marsh news, I had a couple coaches go in, and I am now the MLS Canada Unused Substitutes podcast co-host once again.
Well, I hope MLS gives you all that money for that podcast, MLS Tampa Bay Rowdies podcast, man.
anything they give me is way more than I deserve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dave, Matt, let me just go right into this. You know, it was really, you know, Open Cup bingo card, as USL Championship Twitter guy said, you know, and expected this on our, you know, for Open Cup Madness. And, you know, I'm like, no, you have to expect this for Open Cup Madness. And, oh, my God, it was crazy. I mean, you know, euphoria and then, dejection and then back to euphoria.
I'll say, you know, watch it. So we were all kind of interested to see, you know, we've got a brand new head coach this year in Robbie Nielsen, and we were kind of interested to see how he was going to approach the Open Cup, especially since we were playing Birmingham in the league again that weekend. Was there going to be some kind of lineup rotation? But he just kind of went right out there with a full-strength lineup. And I'm not going to say that I predicted this, because when you're up 4-0, how do you predict conceding 4 goals in 10 minutes? Like, we've had some issues not locking down games, kind of letting the foot off the brake a little bit this season. But still, at 4-0, you think, okay. But when I see Enzo Martinez, who has been a thorn in, I don't even want to say the side, but a thorn in the butt of the Rowdies for a couple years now, when he scores the first goal, just in my head, I'm thinking, no, come on. It can't happen. But then the other voices in your head say, well, it is the Open. Anything can happen in the Open Cup. And then there's a second and a third. By the time there's a third goal, I had already resigned myself to the fact that this was going to end up in extra time. The Rowdies managed to get one goal in each of the extra time periods. A nice little bicycle kick from Ortega in the first, and then cleans up a shot in the second, and we went on to advance to the next round, and also lost 1-0 on the weekend to Birmingham again. That goal being scored by, of course, Enzo Martinez.
Of course. But, I mean, look, what's the bigger prize right there? Going into the next round of the Open Cup, or just another routine match in the regular season of the league?
I mean, I'm of two minds. Like, I love the Open Cup because you get to see some other teams come to town that you haven't seen before. We're going to be hosting FC Dallas. I don't think we've ever played them even in, like, a preseason friendly or anything. So that's going to be kind of cool. At the same time, I'm kind of nervous because of the form that we've seen a little bit. I'd like to kind of get some things straightened out. But I mean, that match had everything, man. You got Cal Jennings scoring a hat trick in there. And then Ortega with a brace in extra time and a sending off. So he won't be available for the next game, against Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was wild. It was just absolutely wild.
Now, I have to ask you this, because the extra time goal by Arteaga, was it really better than Joe Cole's? Come on.
I mean, just the actual goal itself, the strike and the finish, probably not, but the situation, I can remember everything about that Joe Cole goal, because I was sitting up in the press section with the Rowdy's communications guy at the time, and that happened, like, you know, so early on in that match that we kind of, and it was on the far side of the field from us, no one kind of really expected it and didn't really believe it had happened. I mean, Joe's was a better overall strike, but to do this in the first half of extra time when everyone's kind of almost given up hope after you've conceded 4 goals in 10 minutes, situationally, this might be a little bit better. But in terms of actual form, it's got to be Joe Cole.
No, absolutely, because I'll always remember that one, because I watched it on TV on CBS Sports Network, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe he scored it. But I will say this. I mean, this was crazy. I you know, I'm trying to watch as many Open Cup games in the fourth round as much as I can. And, you know, when you see Pasher getting two goals within a 3-minute span and oh my God, the penalty that had to be the killer. That had to be the killer. How do you give up a penalty like that late in second half stoppage time in regulation? How?
You know, we just wanted to keep it interesting. 4-0 seems just kind of like a little bit of a runaway. You want to make this a little bit interesting and, you know, put one out there for the sickos, and boy, did they deliver.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's no longer the, how you call it, it's no longer the football gods. It's now the Open Cup sickos. Is this what you really wanted? Is this what you really wanted? Well, you got it. It's like a freaking kissing show.
There might not be another match this tournament that just equals that for like pure sicko quotient, I'm going to say. You know, just first of all, building up that lead as quickly as it did. You got a hat trick. You throw it all away in the last 10 minutes, and then you come back and score the only two goals in extra time with a bicycle and a sending off. I mean, it's a bingo card, but literally every space was full.
Oh, yes. Until you get the second bingo card that no one knows about.
Yeah. The double secret bingo card. The one that MLS won't play on.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, man. So other than that, when did you bring back the podcast for talking about the Rowdies? Because I thought, you know, you and Cundiff were, it was over, but.
Probably a little bit. I'm trying to think. We kind of been doing it off and on and through maybe middle to end of last season. Had another friend of mine was actually works for the Rays, used to be one of the groundskeepers for the Rowdies, and just, you know, got a hold of me and was like, I kind of feel like talking about the games and, you know, maybe doing some kind of podcasting. We weren't even going to call it Unused Substitutes. I was like, let's, you know, that's off to the side. Let's leave it there and let's build something new. And the more we talked about the way we wanted to do it and the kind of vibe we wanted to have, I was like, that's what we did with Unused Substitute. So let's just bring it back. So we're slowly in the process of putting things back together. I'm getting ready for a move in a couple weeks. So, school's about to end in a couple weeks. So I'm going to have some time once I get moved to start doing some things again, but we're working on some things. We're working on it.
So you're moving like within the Tampa St. Pete area, or you're moving like a little more towards like Lakeland? Where are you going?
I'm moving about 2 miles away from where I am right now.
Oh, okay. That's not bad. That's good.
Nope. I'm very lazy. So I found a place to where I am and I can keep the same zip code. So I'm good.
Hey, you lazy bum. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I'm not going to argue with that one bit.
There you go. So obviously, you're going to face off in the next round against the ever dangerous. Is it dangerous? I think so, because you can't really go, you know, against them. But it is, I believe, what, FC Dallas is your next opponent at home?
Yep, we're going to be hosting FC Dallas at Al Lang next week. Forget if it's Wednesday or Tuesday or Wednesday. I got to go double check the schedule again on that. But I'm looking
forward
to that.
It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
Wednesday. Okay.
Yeah, it's Wednesday. Yep.
Well, I guess I know where I'll be next Wednesday.
Yes, you
yeah.
will.
we'll see. And you know, interesting just beyond the fact of, hey, it's FC Dallas. We've never played them before. We haven't had an MLS team come to Al Lang in a while. We haven't beaten one since. We knocked Seattle out of the cup back in like 2013. So kind of looking forward to seeing what happened here, but also the Rowdies just signed from FC Tulsa, a kid by the name of Nate Worth, a U.S. youth national team. He's 17 right now. He's expected to be going to Europe when he's 18, but we should have him for the rest of the season. Looking to see what he can do. He got in a little bit last weekend at the, near the end of the game and looks to be a pretty calm presence in the midfield, which maybe will help us see out some games if we can get to that point. But I'm interested to see what he could do. I think he might get some time in this game, especially we're going to have a little bit of roster shifting going on with at least with Arteaga out. So we'll see what happens.
Let me ask you this real quick. Damian Rivera, you got him obviously on loan from the New England Revolution. I know the guy that actually, you know, managed him before he was signed by the Revolution. But how has he been for you guys since the loan deal was made?
So far, so good. He's had I'm trying to think off the top of my head. He's had a couple goals, I believe, at least one. He's been in about 9 matches for us, 1 goal. It's really weird. We have a lot of roster change this year, more than we've had in previous years. And part of that's due to the new head coaching and new coaching staff coming in. And it kind of feels like he's still trying to get the idea that the coaches of, you know, who's his best 11 to start with, who are his kind of reliable substitutes. So we've seen a little bit of here and going, but I mean, he's been in every match that we've played so far and looks like he's doing pretty good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So hopefully he'll keep on going and you'll be doing very well in the league down the road. So first of all, I'm glad you're back on the show because obviously I always enjoy having you on the show talking Rowdies, whether it be in the league or in the Open Cup. No, listen, it's true. No, it's great. Great to have you on. And look, all I can say is that it's going to be a hell of a battle for that fifth rounder. And you know very well what you're up against, and we'll see what happens at Al Lang in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. Obviously don't know a ton about FC Dallas. I haven't really watched them and know some of the names on the roster. Looking forward to seeing them come in here. Just, you know, if nothing else, it's a club we haven't seen before. But also the opportunity, if they can win this one, then it's going to be the furthest the Rowdies have gone in the Open Cup since they were reborn back in 2010. So there's a lot of fun stuff, interesting stuff, hopefully that we're going to see this in that match.
Absolutely. Can't wait to have you on again. Hopefully we'll see what happens. Matt, as always, thanks for joining me tonight. I will talk to you soon. And have a good night, my friend, and good luck in round 5.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me. Talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you soon. Matthew Cox welcoming back the Unused Substitutes podcast on the Tampa Bay Rowdies as they go out and pull off what should have been a comfortable 4-0 win, became 4-4 through regulation, and then in extra time got 2 more goals. And unfortunately, the game winner by Arteaga of Tampa Bay, he also gets a straight red card, and he's suspended for this next matchup against FC Dallas. So all I can say is that it's going to be a tough one. Now, all I can say to you, everyone, is that this is where, and has to be said, when you're watching Houston Dynamo defending their Open Cup title against Detroit City, I already felt that it was going to be a tough one. I already felt that it was going to be very, very difficult for Detroit City to take on a team that is ready to, you know, they were hungry, they were ready to go, and I mean, I thought everything was, going to be handled pretty good. And then all of a sudden, chaos ensued. I mean, 2 goals early in the first half. Daniel Steris in the 6th minute. Latif Blessing in the 31st minute. And then all of a sudden, a laser cannon shot by Ryan Williams from way downtown. My God, I couldn't believe how he nailed the back of the net on that one and made it 2-1 Dynamo by pulling that one back. And then Yazeed Matthews gets the equalizer in the 75th minute, and that makes it 2-2. 2 minutes later, Adalberto Carrasquilla made it 3-2 Houston, and you're thinking, that's it, it's over. But then more chaos ensues, and Maxi Rodriguez, who's been unbelievable for Detroit City in the Open Cup, does it again in the 4th round, and getting that big late equalizer about 6 minutes later to make it 3-3, nothing in extra time. You go to penalty kick shootout, and then you have Houston leading 3-2, after three rounds, 4-3 Houston after four rounds, and then you get to the fifth round, and then the stop on Aliyu from Detroit, and that makes it 4, and then the Detroit makes it 4-4 by Bryant, and then everyone's converting chances. Everyone's converting chances. And then it's keeper battle in the shootout. Keeper versus keeper. Tarbell goes last and gets stopped by Salona. And then all of a sudden, it's Salona's turn. He converted it, and Detroit City's on to the fifth round, knocking out the defending Open Cup champions. Like I said, if the Red Bulls were going to be in the Open Cup this year, it's great. But because Houston wanted to defend their title and that took out the Red Bulls, I'm fine with that. It was not a big deal. It was not a big deal whatsoever. I was happy to see that happen, that the Dynamo defending their Open Cup championship, because that is what I wanted. I wanted the Houston Dynamo, who are two-time Open Cup champions, to defend their second title. And unfortunately for them, they got knocked out. One and done. It was over. Absolutely over for them. And you know what? It's a shame that it was over. But you know what? At least they went out and competed. And they took it seriously, because that is an organization that takes the Open Cup seriously. They don't mess around. They don't claim to do something and then they don't do it. That, my friends, that is a real club, regardless of what league they're in. That is a real club coming in, wanting to be a part of the Open Cup. And that's all you can really ask for. Just remember, it's not the club's fault for saying no in MLS. It is the fault of the front office of the first division that led the no and then said, fine, here's your eight. Because we need everyone involved in the Open Cup to make the game special, not just for one particular league, for everyone. We still have some issues. We still have some problems. That's without a doubt. But I think as of right now, we can definitely say that we can fix these issues only if everyone comes together and does not act on their own. They have to go and be together as one. Period. We have to be whole. And whether MLS likes it or not, U.S. Soccer, once again, and I stress this with U.S. Soccer, please. I don't say this just because I want to sound so smart. I don't say this because I'm trying to be divisive against U.S. Soccer. I say this because I care about the game in this country. Of all the strides that have been made, not just MLS, not just USL, not just NISA, not just NPSL or UPSL or all the other amateur leagues under the umbrella of American soccer. It's for everyone. We must not allow shenanigans like this, the game in this country. Everyone must work together. And if we all don't work together, then we are all in trouble. aren't we? And this is what MLS doesn't understand. The actions that MLS does for what they did to the Open Cup, everyone else is watching. Everyone else is looking. And look what the Premier League has done with the FA. They both were in cahoots by getting rid of the replays for the next FA Cup tournament in England. And the leagues in the EFL were not happy about it. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them whatsoever. Because they went and did this partnership behind their backs. And as you heard with me, with Carter Krishnire, about the Open Cup, about the situation, it is just absolutely asinine that U.S. Soccer cowered to MLS. See, the Premier League did it differently. They didn't cower. You know, I mean, the English FA did not cower to the Premier League. Both the Premier League and the English FA went behind the backs of the fellow leagues under the umbrella of English football. They made it about themselves. That's the problem. That's the issue. And if you make it about yourselves, then it's doomed. Period. Doomed. And that's why we cannot have it doomed like this. We cannot have these cup competitions doomed the way that the top leagues are trying to get rid of these cup competitions to help strengthen the pyramid of their representative country of players up and down the fabric of the game in their respective countries. Cannot do that. Cannot. So we'll see what happens going forward. We'll see what the situations will be. We'll just have to wait and see what the next moves are, because until we find out, you know, right now we're stuck where we are. And I understand the first division is the best division. The first division is the top division. But once again, they are not the end all to be all. They must find a way, U.S. Soccer, they must find a way to go out and tell MLS, we will no longer accept these shenanigans. It is disheartening to see this happen. It is sad to see this happen. Cannot allow it to happen again. We cannot allow it to ever, ever happen again. And hopefully we will all learn from these mistakes. So we'll see what happens moving forward, and we'll see what happens when U.S. Soccer does the right thing. We're going to keep on going here, reviewing the fourth round matchups of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. My next guest, podcasting the Charleston Battery, and that is Mr. Del Schaefer joining me right now on a big victory over South Georgia Tormenta in extra time. Del, welcome back. It's been a while. I'm glad to have you back on the show, and how are you, sir?
Good, Daniel. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you back on. So, the Battery down at Patriots Point, my God, what a match that was. I have to be honest with you. I thought it was over. I thought the Battery had it until the craziness happened, and then extra time comes in, and it's all Battery from that point on.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried. I mean, you can't really look past South Georgia Tormenta. They're a great organization, great team. I mean, they play in League One, but I think the USL as a whole is very competitive. And I know we had a great team. We made maybe five changes to the team from the team that played against Hartford the game before. So I was a little bit worried. But we would score, and then they would come straight back. I don't know if you want me to talk you through the game or.
Absolutely. Go for it. Well, let me go through here. First of all, M.D. Myers, you probably know him, what his first name is, but, you know, Myers, he does it all by himself, but, you know, what great moments he had in the first half getting those two goals. I mean, what a special player he really looks to be for the Battery.
Yeah, so I guess coming out of last season, all the fans were really excited about the team because we had almost all the players returning, and then you get to get some heartbreak with players going to MLS. We had, you know, our goalkeeper left, our, you know, up-and-coming midfielder left, and so we had to start making some signings, and we grabbed M.D. Myers from NYCFC2. He was the Golden Boot winner in the next Pro League. And then Mark Hainick, who had to even try out for the team. So we're pretty awesome up top with, we call them M&M, Myers and Mark Hainick. And along with Ben Pierman, the coach, he has got us just really firing with the press we do. And if you look at the first goal, I think it was a former player that played for the Battery, played it back to his goalkeeper on his right foot. He switches to his left foot, and then Myers is all over him. Steals it, beats like four players, and then scores the goal and just building towards his eventual hat trick.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that
and
was
so they would come back.
Fantastic.
They came
yep,
back
go ahead.
And scored the goal to come back, what was it, 1-1. So we would score, they would score. We ended up scoring again right before halftime. Josh Drack came in at left back for Dos Santos. And he sends in the cross, and Myers is able to finish with his head. So 2-1 going into halftime. And then going to the second half, they Tormenta does the same thing. They're able to kind of – we have a high line. They pass it right through the middle and run around onto the ball. And so they tie it, and now I'm just sweating bullets. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I got to say this. I got to say this, though, you know, when Gabriel Rodriguez of Tormenta made it 2-2 in the 83rd minute, and you're going into extra time, obviously, I mean, were there moments you're thinking about last year's final against Phoenix Rising where, you know, you're going to penalties and you're thinking everything's going to be fine, but then it didn't become fine? Were you having second thoughts about, you know, what was going to happen if it did go to penalties?
I was a little worried just because I saw that we had five solid players on the bench that we didn't start. And then I see, you know, the team starting to worry a little bit. So we're bringing in subs. We're bringing in Ikaza, Mark Hainick. And so I started to feel a little bit better about it. You know, with the team being undefeated and the season that we've had this year, just like last year, you just kind of always feel like someone is going to step up and make something happen. So
yep,
I guess
absolutely.
That's what ended up happening. We get to extra time, and then actually right before extra time, we had a solid chance. Their goalkeeper, I think Drew Romig, made an amazing double save in like the 83rd minute. So we had a chance, but then going to extra time, you don't know what's going to happen, and I don't want to go to penalties against them. It could be anybody's game.
No, absolutely. I mean, that would bother me too, to be honest with you. That would really bother me too because, you know, penalties is always a crapshoot and you know, after what happened in the final last year, unfortunately, but still though, you know, it's a crapshoot and you never know what's going to happen when you're taking on, especially a third division team like Tormenta, who's done very well in USL League One in these last several seasons. But still though, you know, you get nervous. But Myers does it again. Within the second half stoppage time and extra time, that was probably the biggest yell and scream elation probably that Patriots Point hasn't had in a while.
Yeah, I went back and watched it back. There was actually, I think, 1 minute of stoppage time, and you're getting into, like, the very last seconds. I think Mark Hainick was at the top of the box. He sends in a powerful low shot, which the goalkeeper parries, and it spills out to Myers, cut inside and score. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I wanted to win so bad because I wanted to play Atlanta again. And then they pulled it out. It was amazing.
Yep. It really, really was. You know, you've had Ben Pearman as your head coach for a couple of seasons now. I know he was over in Detroit City before coming over to Charleston. But what has he done to this club that maybe past head coaches either equal to him or not at his level of coaching to give the Battery every single match a threat against everyone in USL Championship League?
So, like, big picture, we had, you know, different owners. We had the long-running coach that we had to replace. We brought in Connor Casey, and we're doing the transition from ownership, different coaches, different players. They brought in Lee Cohen as president from Tampa Bay, and he has been kind of like, no one really knows as much about what he does, but he is the one that's made a lot of the changes. He brought in, I think, helped bring in Ben Pearman, and they, along with the ownership, Rob Salvatore and the Holy City Football Group, I think they've given Pearman the opportunity to bring in the players that he needs. Pearman was at Memphis after Detroit before he came here, and he slowly, like, poached players that he liked from his time at Memphis and kind of built the spine of the team. So you look at Malloy in the midfield, Chris Allen. So Chris Allen came over the first season, and then Malloy this, you know, this season. He's built his team. Graham Smith came from Memphis. Segbers was at Memphis before he went to Miami. And then he is just, I think they've given him the pieces he needs to build the team. And he also has the right just team building. He, you know, he is very encouraging in how he prepares the team for the games. And he also has given them, you know, just like the preparation, you're talking about the press, and they know kind of what they're doing and when the game happens. They know what their job is.
That's great to hear. That's absolutely fantastic to hear, and hopefully he'll keep on doing that for the Battery, and it should be really exciting to see what's going to happen in this next round. Now, as you said, Atlanta United is coming up to South Carolina, just a state away. And what have you seen from Atlanta United? Obviously, they're kind of hanging around in MLS play, but they did very well in their fourth-round matchup in the Open Cup. What are you expecting from them, and what do you think Ben Pearman's going to do and be prepared for them?
I feel like Ben Pearman has a little something to prove. I think it was last year we lost to Inter Miami in maybe this round of the Open Cup. Mark Hainick got hurt in the beginning, the first half of the game, and then we kind of went down from there. But I feel like Pearman might not be around much longer. I think he has ambitions to maybe go up to MLS or wherever he's going to go. He's shown Coach of the Year, you know, accolades. So I feel like if he can beat Atlanta United, he's going to kind of put other, you know, managers, general managers in MLS on notice. Atlanta United played some younger kids in their last game against Charlotte Independence. So I'm interested to see kind of what Pineda does, because I know he, you know, is kind of on the hot seat. I'm an Atlanta United fan as well, and I'm going to be at the game in Nashville on Saturday, and then I'll be at the game on Tuesday here. But we have a game Wednesday in Birmingham, and then we're off until next Tuesday. So I feel like we are going to be fresh, whereas Atlanta United has Cincinnati, I think, a Wednesday, and then Nashville on Saturday before coming to Charleston.
So it won't be weird sitting on a certain type of fence while watching those two teams play?
Well, I grew up here. I've been a Battery fan since I was a kid. Coach Augie, who was before Connor Casey, was my club coach. So I'm a Battery fan first. So I'll definitely be rooting for the Battery. And then when they don't play Atlanta, I root for Atlanta. So.
All right. I'm just having a little fun with it. You know that. I know. It's Battery.
Yes.
It's always Battery first. That I know. It's okay. You know, I got to say, you know, Charleston Battery has had a lot of successes. Obviously, there's been times they haven't had success, but still, though, it's really refreshing to see how strong the Charleston Battery does take this Open Cup seriously, the tournament seriously. And, you know, what does that mean to the community, obviously, to see the Battery go out there and perform as a whole whenever, you know, whenever these games get scheduled?
I think you have to know, as like a soccer, former soccer player, coach, and as a fan, like people that have been coming to these Battery games for years know that every time we play these MLS teams, we have a chance. I mean, we just have a record over the years. I've seen us beat FC Dallas. I've seen us beat the Earthquakes and Wondolowski. So we don't really, we're not really, you know, scared of them. And even though people like Ben Olsen, I don't know if you talked about this yet, him saying that there's a huge gap between MLS and USL, which is totally wrong. It's not
absolutely
as big as he thinks
totally
it is.
Or
he's just trying to protect his butt and protect his, yeah, his image there. But I think USL Championship has grown leaps and bounds, and I think MLS teams are on notice. And I think Pineda and Atlanta, going back to that, I think they're going to have to maybe take this more seriously. So I think when you see the lineup for Atlanta next Tuesday, you're going to see how important they are going to take this cup, you know, for the future and trying to get a position if they can win it. And then also just his job and how much they, you know, value, how much they see how good that the Battery is. And so I think they're going to take it more seriously than they took Charlotte.
Absolutely. No, I didn't
talk about
it earlier.
Do you think we have a chance against Atlanta?
Oh, absolutely. No, I think you guys have a – listen, I think you guys have a very good chance to upset Atlanta United, because I'll be honest with you right now. To me, they can say, you know, there's a distance because, you know, USL Championship is second division and all that blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. But still, though, the truth of the matter is this. You got to play the game. You got to go out there. You know, if you're an MLS team and you want to prove that you're still, you know, the best club or the best league in American soccer, you got to play 90 minutes or go an extra 30 or go into a shootout to prove that. Don't assume you think you can and then you don't. So, no, I think we're even here. I think we've all improved here, and that's the number one thing. As long as there's true improvement, I think basically, Detroit City did well in their game. I thought the Battery, you know, is going to give Atlanta United a run for their money. I think New Mexico United also gave Real Salt Lake a game, and now we'll see what happens. I mean, the Sounders almost lost in their Open Cup match, but they pushed it to the shootout and won it.
I think the big thing is that the Battery, we haven't had almost any injuries other than Arturo Rodriguez. So we're pretty fully fit team, and also having a week off. And also Atlanta will, you know, they're going to come in heavy after playing at Cincinnati, at Nashville. And those are games they need to try and win, because they're going down quick. They haven't had any wins, lost last three games at home. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on them. I think more pressure on them than us. And we're going to be at Patriots Point. So I think we're going to have the upper
Absolutely.
Hand.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with you. Dell, as always, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Hope to have you back on again soon to talk more Charleston Battery stuff. I hope you have a good night and good luck in the fifth round. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Once again, Dell Schaefer on his own Charleston Battery podcast, as we're going to keep on moving here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. Joining me right now, brand new guest here covering Indy 11 from the Indianapolis area. He's also one of the hosts of the USL show, Mr. Brett Mullenix, joining me right now to talk about Indy 11's victory. Brett, welcome to the show, and how are you, sir? Are you there, Brett?
This is Thad. I'm on from Kansas City.
Oh, I'm sorry, Thad. My fault. Oh, Thad, I am so sorry. That's my fault. I apologize. I'm sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I mixed up the times. Once again, it is Thad from Kansas City Soccer Journal, as Sporting Kansas City took on and defeated Union Omaha 2-1. Thad, I apologize. That's my fault.
Yeah, no problem. I was just like, I was going to sit here and listen to the other one. That's no problem.
Nope, that's okay. Nope, I screwed it up. That's on my end, and that's $10 in the cookie jar. That's all on me. But anyway, Thad, you traveled to Omaha, Nebraska to watch this matchup, and, you know, I have to say, Union Omaha did give you a game, And I know it was on their home field at the time, but still, though, what was it about facing them again and taking them on over at their facility?
Well, it's actually, it wasn't even their facility. They weren't able to use their normal field or their backup field. So they were at their third field, which was, I think it's Coniglia Park at University of Nebraska, Omaha. So they would normally use the, they normally play in a baseball stadium where the minor league team plays, and then they back up to Creighton University Stadium. But it was still their hometown, so they were, you know, they could rest in their own beds, so all that good stuff. They had a good crowd out there. It was a lot of fun. Actually, it's one of the most fun I've been to for a while. I was shooting the game and standing in front of a bunch of old Sporting KC fans who were harassing me that knew me, so that was a lot of fun.
Well, everybody knows you in Kansas City, Thad. I mean, for goodness sakes, you're popular. Come on.
I'm not popular. I'm just old.
Oh, no, don't go there. I'm old. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we'll have to compare that one day, but anyway. Anyway. Omaha gave them a good game. I mean, honestly, I expected that. They, you know, a lot of times when you go play the second and third divisions of the world and you don't play all of your starters right off the bat, they're going to give you a good game because they're out there to play and the other guys aren't necessarily in form. Not that anybody in Kansas City is in form right now, but they came out to play. It was a good game.
No, they really did. No, they really did. I mean, you know, you're down 1-0 from a goal by Norte. I hope I pronounced his name correctly in the 32nd minute. That must have been tough to see.
Yeah, again, not too unexpected. I just was hoping that Kansas City would have scored before that, but they just weren't in form. So second half, they started making some changes.
Absolutely. And you know what? Here's the funny thing, because I talked to some of the media members in MLS, and some were saying, you know, before the playoffs last year, you know, Kansas City was going to get run over by St. Louis City. And I keep telling them, do not underestimate Peter Vermes. Never underestimate Peter Vermes, because you know this, Mike Kuhn knows this, and I know this. They may have a slow start to a season, but Peter is a damn good head coach, and he'll always find the answers and fix them, and he'll always get Sporting into a playoff position.
Well, not always, but he has a good track record of usually doing that, yeah. If anybody was sleeping on Kansas City going into the playoffs last year, they just weren't paying attention, which really doesn't surprise me with a lot of MLS pundits, because Kansas City just had been consistently getting better. They were terrible through the first 10 games. They finally won a game, and then they just kind of started to get better and better and better, and that's why they rolled through St. Louis and then pretty much got
exactly.
A little bit cheated by some referees in Houston, not on purpose, not accusing anybody of anything, but they got apologized to for missed calls and got knocked out of the playoffs. We kind of were hoping this year would be a little more consistent coming into the year, but it has been pretty much the same thing as last year.
Yep, it really was. But I will say this, and, you know, with the adjustments he made, and right away, Marinos Tsonis, I mean, he's been pretty good for Sporting Kansas City for these last couple of years, hasn't he? I mean, finding that equalizer in the 48th minute, that was a big goal.
Yeah, he really hasn't played much this year. I mean, only had a couple minutes, I think, and he got that start, and then he went the full 120, got the equalizer, was a big part in just applying the pressure that ended up getting the second goal even. So he was kind of showing what they had hoped he would be, but he also got some time in this last game, and again, didn't look too bad. He's had his ups and downs, though, that's for sure.
That's for sure. And then, of course, you go all the way through regulation. You can't get anything in there, and then you go right into extra time. And were you feeling a little uneasy going into extra time because, you know, I mean, both sides were trading chances, and you're getting closer and closer to the end of the second half of extra time. And was there a thought of, you know, can Sporting Kansas City do it in the penalty kick shootout?
Well, you know, in the past, I've never really worried. I shouldn't say never really worried. I haven't worried for a while because Tim Melia is usually money in penalty kicks in shootouts. But it wasn't Tim Melia in goal. And it was John Pulskamp, who he's a quality keeper, but he's not got the PK stopping magic that Tim Melia has. So that would be a little bit more worry. And, you know, I've seen other results in the league. I've been, you know, watching the Open Cup for years. And I would have not been surprised if they would have pulled off the upset, the cup set.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, exactly. But, boy, you know, I know Alan Pulido has not been, you know, healthy enough to stay consistent in the lineup for Sporting Kansas City, because I know he was the big designated player signing for the club, and he just came up big in the final minute of extra time and put Sporting Kansas City into the next round. What was that about? You know, how did that feel for you to see Pulido finally getting a big-time goal to give Sporting Kansas City a must-needed victory in the Open Cup?
Well, yeah, he's been struggling this year. I mean, he came on strong last year after coming back from the knee injury, but he's kind of, again, as the team went, he's not played very well, and it was good to see him get that goal, but it was just so timely, and it was, like, right in front of me, and he showed the skill that he was paid DP money for, to take the touch and then get the keeper starting to lean one way and just put it back behind him. So it was a nice shot.
No, oh, that was great to hear. And, you know, look, you root for the DPs that, you know, you want to see them be successful in this league, obviously. I mean, I don't know how many DPs I've seen that have not been worth the money ever since coming over, whether they're a big name or not. But still, I know Pulido really wants to make a name for himself in Kansas City for the club. So, you know, I thought that was a pretty good display from him to show everyone there that he wants to be a part of it. So, I mean, that was fantastic. You know, as we take a look in the fifth round, Sporting Kansas City, the next opponent is going to be, if I can just find it here.
FC Tulsa.
I had it here. That's right.
FC Tulsa.
How about that? FC Tulsa. Now, is this the first time Sporting Kansas City will be playing a match in the state of Oklahoma?
This one will be in Kansas City.
Oh, it will be in Kansas City. I'm sorry. Then the first time against a team from Oklahoma, I should say.
No. Last year they played Tulsa, the other Tulsa team. Because this one's the USL Championship, and that one was the semi-pro level team, third, fourth division. I forget which league they were technically in. Really nice guys.
NPSL.
Some great guys. Yes.
Oh, they are, yeah.
Even had one of my daughter's former coaches down there as an advisor when they came up here to play. He had played some low-level pro soccer also, good guy, Levi Coleman. But anyway, this is a completely different team, USL Championship, a pretty decent team from what I understand. I haven't researched them heavily yet, but, yeah, it'll be the second time to face a team from Tulsa. I don't know if they've ever actually went down to Tulsa. I can't remember the history on that one, but it'll be the second time they face a team from Tulsa.
Nope, it really will be. It's going to be huge. What have you seen, you know, from this year's Sporting Kansas City side? You know, what have you felt they've done differently to maybe have a better start? You know, their current position in the table in the West. What do you like from Vermees so far? And did you feel it was about time that he relinquished those sporting director duties?
Yeah, it's been a lot of controversy over the sporting director duties. I mean, he's still going to be over top of everybody no matter what. But and when they tried to bring in the technical director, GM, whichever term you want to use there, that didn't go well when they brought in Gavin Wilkinson, and they rescinded that after a week. But I think they will eventually bring somebody in to fulfill that role again. And then again, they've struggled this the beginning of the season. They started off a little bit better than they did last year. They're still a little bit better as far as points wise, but they have dropped a lot of points from winning positions. They've given up some goals that they should not have given up. And in this last game, Vermees let the players know that he was unhappy after the game and that some players would be suffering after this because he was not.
Yep.
They were not
and
giving
I
enough effort.
Yep, I agree with you there. That's unfortunate, but we'll see how much more the Magic runs with Peter Vermes, and hopefully there'll be more Magic in Open Cup games because, you know, look, it's really been how many years now Peter Vermes has been not just a player, but head coach and sporting director for this club?
Oh, I think, well, he was took over as sporting director when the new owners bought the team back in 07, I think. And he took over coaching in 09, I believe, when they fired Anofo. And he took over as an interim for the end of 1 year and then came the head coach the next year. Even for people who want Vermes out, they should have to respect the fact that he has built this club up to what it is. He's been a key part to it. The DNA runs across the entire club from first team to second team to academy, you know, training facilities. You know, there's two training facilities in town for Sporting. You know, the stadium, all of that comes into play, and that's a lot of it is due to Vermes. So even if you don't like the job he's doing, at least have to respect what he's done.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like if you don't mind me getting a little nostalgic here, you know, you and I, including CUNY, were part of SB Nation back in the time.
Yep.
And, you know, great to have you on the show as always. And how has Kansas City Soccer Journal been so far since, you know, going independent, all the way independent, I should say, now for the website?
You know, I think we've done okay. I mean, it does a little bump because, you know, people are used to going to one site. We had to essentially rebrand and do a lot of things to get back up to speed. And we're still not 100% of everything we want to be. But then again, I don't think we'll ever be that. But we've got more writers, more people interested in contributing. We actually, when I took over managing the Blue Testament back in the SB Nation day, is one of my agreements was that I could cover any soccer that I wanted to, as long as it had a touch to Kansas City, because back then they didn't care about anything other than MLS, but I was covering NWSL and indoor soccer and college soccer and whatever. So we've kind of just continued that. We have more writers, like some who just want to cover the Kansas City Current and the NWSL. Some will primarily want to cover Sporting KC and MLS. You know, some will cover SKC2 and MLS Next Pro. The Kansas City Comets and the MASL, the Major Arena Soccer League. So it's pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm really happy for you, and I'm happy for CUNY. I'm happy for everyone in Kansas City because they still have a number one website to go to that covers all of soccer in the Kansas City area, and I think that's great.
Yeah, and I mean, I literally have had two people talk to me over the last 2 weeks about coming to join to contribute in additional ways. One focused on women's soccer and one focused on more grassroots stuff. So it's cool.
It really, really is. Thad, as always, thank you for joining me tonight. I really do appreciate it. Good luck with Sporting Kansas City in the fifth round against FC Tulsa. Hopefully they will keep on going into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, that's the one thing about Vermes is unlike a lot of MLS coaches, is he's always taken the Open Cup seriously. So he's won three of them since he took over as coach and had some deep runs and some other ones. And, you know, sometimes a little bad luck or, you know, things don't go your way, but he takes it seriously. So even if they don't perform well in league play, I think he will push to take it very seriously as far as he can in the Open Cup.
Absolutely. You have a good night, Thad, and thank you once again.
You too, sir, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Thad from the Kansas City Soccer Journal, as he talks about what they did against Union Omaha in their matchup in the Open Cup. Now we're going to have my next guest coming from Indianapolis, Indiana. This is Mr. Brett Mulnix from the USL Show. He's also an Indy 11 supporter talking about their Open Cup victory. Brett, welcome back. Welcome to the show for the first time, and how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Good evening. You know, I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight? I've been listening to the show a little bit. Good show so far.
Well, Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I'm doing very well and very eager to talk about Indy 11. You know, I have to say, this is a really, you know, for them, this is their first ever, like, I would like to think their first ever real run in the Open Cup. Mm-hmm. I've never seen them get this deep into the Open Cup. I mean, they've started in the past in the second round. They've moved on to the third mm-hmm. round. Or when they have started in the third round or in the second round, they've ended it like one and done. And to me, you know, this feels like a real attempt that they're going to attempt to move forward and go deeper into an Open Cup run.
No, exactly. A lot of us have kind of thought, as you know, the whole light of the whole MLS situation coming in, a lot of fans and supporters, and I think coaches as well, if you remember when the speech of the first game when the MLS news came out, a lot of people really wanted to take it, this Open Cup, as kind of being kind of an audition for MLS, and to kind of show that, hey, we might be USL, but we have some serious quality here. And kudos to the team and Sean McCauley, hope I said that right, I always did that name wrong, has really given these guys lots of motivation to kind of really push for this tournament. And honestly, they've been on fire, and it also started with really well, quick start in last Wednesday's game against San Antonio.
Absolutely. It really did. And, you know, two goals in the span of 8 minutes is just unbelievable to see. Kind of unheard of, to be honest with you. But that was great. You know, Augustine Williams, what was that goal like for you guys?
Oh, man, it was a little bit of relief. I know he's kind of had some fits accumulating to the Indy system since coming over from Charleston. But it was such a good feeling to see him really once again kind of be that focal point up front, up top, and doing it so quickly. I remember a bunch of us, we were just so shocked at how quick and how sudden this was. And it was just an overall sigh of relief from the team that we're not going to have to struggle to get through this into the next round, as we've had past, you know, matches, you know, like the last round in Chicago where we got the one early goal and then we had dragged through the entire time. So seeing just Adi really stepping up to be the player that he should be and really kind of taking command of this game early on really felt a sigh of relief and kind of new to a lot of us Indy 11 fans, and especially in the supporter group, not quite familiar territory. So we were very happy to see that.
Very glad to hear that. And, of course, 8 minutes later, Jack Blake makes it 2-0. And the party's probably going on over at the mic. You know, what was that goal like for you guys?
Yeah, again, it was another shock because, as I mentioned, with the Chicago goal, it was like Chicago game, the previous rounds, we had that one and that was it. So, really showing that energy, you know, because we are taking that control, you know, the team has really had that energy. And within 10 minutes now, we have two goals. The team has been playing with that energy, and obviously the BYB was bringing it, and it just translated onto the pitch. And I believe correct me if I'm wrong here, but San Antonio didn't have a shot on goal until like the 30th minute. And Indy, with that second goal, really put in the dominance that they had shown within those first 10 minutes, plus throughout pretty much the entire game. And they rode that momentum. So we knew at that point Indy was in control as long as they didn't do their mistakes that we've sometimes been known to do in years past. So it was a wonderful feeling. The team felt the energy, and they just take a little bit of that sigh of relief that, well, they're under control now, and this won't be like a normal round for them.
Exactly. And that's what you're hoping for, and that's what the hope is, to see what's going to happen. You know, after that, nothing really much in the goal department, but I just have to say, what was that like to see Indy 11 holding off San Antonio FC the way they did for the entire 90 minutes while holding on to that 2-0 lead?
It was kind of honestly impressive. Kudos to the back line, who has up until recently kind of been problematic, which led to the goalkeeper changes a few weeks ago. So the back line and the team, really, the team played a very cohesive defensive energy in there, and really limiting San Antonio's attack was such a thing to witness. And it was, again, a testament to what Sean's been doing with his 11 team. As I said, ever since that whole MLS news started happening, he's got this team playing at another gear. And they were, you know, they're doing what kind of been Indy's kind of DNA, which has been kind of good defense and trying to limit mistakes and scoring a goal or two here and there to kind of really control the game. And they were able to do that once again to a pretty, you know, not the same San Antonio that we saw lift the USL Cup, the USL Championship, you know, 2 years ago, but they're still a really solid team. So it was great to see, and kudos to the back line for once again doing a really good performance. They've done, I think, almost a less than a goal in the last previous like 3 or 4 matches since really that Louisville game. So kudos to the back line for doing a good job once again.
So your next opponent is going to be Detroit City. You know them very well because they play in the same league you do. What is, I mean, how's that been between the two clubs? Has that been like a real barn burner of a matchup every time they play each other in championship league?
Yeah, it's always been tough. So the two leads are, so the two teams obviously have a little bit of a rivalry there. Indianapolis, Detroit, not too far away, 5 hours. You know, it's close enough for Midwest standards to be considered rivalry. And it's always been tough. 2 years ago, the team, it took Indy 11 to like the 80th minute, if I recall, to get like a late minute set piece goal. And then earlier this year, Indy 11 were up and Detroit City ended up drawing, and then I believe they didn't lead. I tried to forget that game. So it's always been tough. It's always been close. And it's always been passionate from the players, from the coaches, and from the fans. So it's going to be really exciting to kind of see. And with Detroit City coming off that MLS Cup set, obviously maybe some darlings of the U.S. Open Cup, it's going to be a good one and very entertaining. That's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Now, let's transition a little bit to the situation with Indy 11 and the stadium situation. I mean, look, we all know what happened when your mayor, Joe Hogsett, pulled support from the Indy 11 Park project due to, I guess, there is some form of hidden ownership group that wants to be a part of Major League Soccer to bring a club into Indianapolis. And then all of a sudden you have an investor out of nowhere from Fort Wayne, an entrepreneur, Mr. Chuck Surak, who just came out of nowhere and just aligned himself with ownership to build the stadium. I mean, as someone that's there 24/7, just tell all of us, what were your emotions like this going from such a low to a high out of the blue?
Honestly, it's been a roller coaster. At first, when the news dropped that the whole 11 Park was in throttled out of the way to some mystery group, there was a lot of anger by a lot of people, and it even spilled over into the BYB section that following Saturday. Tensions were high, and obviously with this kind of happened, it was kind of shady. There are still a lot of details that were not quite publicly known at the time, and a lot of things were still up in the air. So going from that, going to the city council meeting, people really trying to speak up, learning more about the plan, unraveling this very complex onion, so to speak, and all these layers that keep coming up, to suddenly now one of the short lists of billionaires in the state of Indiana suddenly getting involved and almost guaranteeing a stadium, especially the 11 Park, will have the funding. And it's honestly been a lot. I know a lot of people have dealt with the almost essentially two ownership groups fighting for your city and fighting for your current team and whatever a future potential team is. And it's been exhausting down here. I never thought I'd had to experience it myself. And I can definitely tell you, it is constantly seeing your city talked about, your team talked about in a way, does get exhausting. But hopefully now with this new news and the current trend that things are going, things will look up for the Indy 11 and for its team. And kudos to the BYB for being who they're doing, really champion for our club, as well as the ownership city, kind of hopefully reconciling this going forward. This is what's been rumored to kind of what's been happening. So it's been a roller coaster, and it's tiring. I'm not going to lie.
No, I don't blame you at all. It's very exhausting because, you know, I was proud for you. I was proud for all the soccer fans in Indianapolis that 11 Park broke ground. You know, all the government officials of the city and, of course, from the state were very excited and happy that this was going to come to fruition. And then all of a sudden, that mysterious announcement came out of nowhere. And I'm like, what is going on here? And I don't understand why all of a sudden he pulled his support when he was there for the groundbreaking ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was just a lot of hurt feelings. Just as you mentioned, he was there at the ceremony, and Mayor Joe Hodgson has been in the BYB. So in his shock announcement, not even including the BYB or even letting the team like ownership know about this whole idea, at least not publicly, was kind of a stab in the back to us. And it was shocking, right? As you said, USL was celebrating the stadium deal. We were celebrating the stadium deal. The city, the state were. It was just so shocking and out of left field.
It was. It really, really was. And I'm just glad that, you know, you do have an answer in Mr. Surak, who came in out of nowhere and saved it. I mean, let's be honest. He saved the deal. He saved everything. And I was very happy to see that for all. So let me ask you this then. Do you still think this undercover ownership group that's trying to bring an MLS club into Indianapolis, do you think it's still going to go through? Or do you think there will be some detractors maybe going to this supposed stadium that we don't – I mean, apparently they claim to have a site, but they can't purchase the building because the person doesn't want to sell it.
Yeah, so – to answer your first, I believe, at least from what I understand, any outside group will be more than likely persuaded, unless somehow they can agree with the city to a better deal than what's proposed, because one of the main reasons behind the pullout was financial. But now, obviously, as you said, the new investor has come in. That has kind of put that to bed. So now it's a matter of fact, do the city want to vilify the current team, and then whatever would come in afterwards. So short answer, I don't think an outside group will be coming in. I believe, for what I've heard throughout the community, is that this ownership group is almost on par with whatever that outside group would have been. So now at this point, why would you want to start over? And it's made the city potentially look stupid, the mayor in the decision. And the cards right now are on Indy 11's side, and which is not something that we thought would have happened 2 weeks ago.
Right. All right. Well, listen, good luck in the next round of the Open Cup. Hopefully it'll be a victory, and I will talk to you soon, and you take care, Brett. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it, and happy to jump on anytime.
All right. Take care. Once again, Brett Mullix from the USL Show.
and from Indianapolis, Indiana, talking about Indy 11's victory. And now we finish off in the wild, wild Pacific Northwest. The Founders do it again in the Open Cup at Starfire. And to talk about it is Cascadia FC's own Michael Martinez. Michael, welcome back. How are you, my friend? What an amazing night at Starfire it was.
Thank you for having me back, Daniel. It was an amazing night at Starfire.
Andrew Thomas is him. He better be, damn it.
I don't know, that was unbelievable. Extension, he might as well be.
Exactly. You know, I got to say, he stood on his head, not just making those big-time saves against Louisville City, who is a quality side in USL Championship. They are a quality side. But how he was able to just come out of nowhere and make all those saves out of the blue, it was tremendous.
It was honestly amazing to see. Like, I know, like, Stefan Fry, he is the starting goalkeeper for the Sounders through and through, but Andrew Thomas really cemented himself, and I feel like he's going to start pushing Fry, because Thomas made more saves in that penalty shootout than Fry has had saves in his entire career.
Absolutely. I mean, look, you know as well as I do, Stefan Fry is a very reliable goalkeeper. One day it's going to be over. One day it's just going to end that run, and all you can say is they probably have the next great goalkeeper for the Sounders right there coming from Tacoma.
1,000%. And myself and almost every other writer included thought it was going to be Stephen Cleveland, but Andy Thomas really just came out of nowhere, for me at least, and he's really, really proving himself. He really wants to fight for that number one spot.
Yep, absolutely. Let's get to the goals in this one. Paul Rothrock in the 41st minute, able to get that opening goal for Seattle. What did you see in that one?
So I thought it was a really good run of play. Like, for most of the season, the Sounders have kind of looked kind of dead and a little bit slower in attack, but it was nice to see Georgie Manungu make that run through and hit that cross really quickly. And seeing Paul Rothrock make that run and through and hit that volley, that was something I haven't seen even senior Sounders players do, and it was great to see finally a little bit of attacking prowess from the Sounders.
Yep, absolutely. And then Danny in the second half, it was Danny Musovski. That was a very important goal to make it 2-0 at the time, and it really looked like Seattle basically had their foot on the gas.
They really did, and honestly, I want to give as much credit to Musovski as I can, because he's been a great signing since we picked him up in the offseason, but that goal doesn't come unless Danny Leyva, who was cooking all game, hits that cross. Danny Leyva hit the perfect ball, and I feel like he is criminally underrated, not by just the Sounders FO, but even by Sounders fans, and I think the kid needs more game time.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely he does. Absolutely, and of course we'll see what happens. But then again, penalty converted in the 67th minute by Sean Tosh of Louisville. And then just before you get to the 90th minute, Jorge Gonzalez makes it 2-2 for Louisville City. Extra time was crazy. Nothing happened there, but then you get the penalty kick shootout, and Louisville goes first. My God. Saves all over the place. Thomas, just unbelievable what he did in the first two penalty kick attempts for Louisville, stopping Tosh, stopping Widner, and then you're thinking to yourself, you know, everything's going right, you're going to advance, and then, of course, the big save on Leo Chu stops you.
That's been the kind of the discourse among, like, the Sounders community since that Open Cup penalty shootout. Leo Chu, he should have done so much better. He's a senior player. He's taken penalties before. He's not new to this, and doing a starter step, especially in that moment, after your keeper makes two insane saves, you can't be doing that. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I love Leo Chu. He's one of my favorite players on the team, but, like, that was just plain stupid.
Yep. It really, really was, and it's a shame because, you know, sometimes I know you're trying to be cheeky out there, but don't be cheeky. Just convert the damn thing, would you please? You know, just
not,
craziness.
Not in those kind of moments.
Well, yep. And then I didn't know this because I didn't know you had Dwayne De Rosario's kid on the Sounders. That's unbelievable. I did not know
yes,
he was with the club. That's great.
Yeah, he signed,
because
he actually technically signed with the Tacoma Defiance in the off season after spending a couple years in the Canadian Premier League. And this was his first senior team call-up.
Ah, okay. Not bad. Unfortunately, though, him and the other Louisville player did not convert their chances in the penalty kick shootout. So then you go to another couple of rounds, and all of a sudden you get to the last round, and Thomas makes the save. Now, I was shocked the keeper for Louisville did not attempt that, but Thomas did, and he beats the Louisville keeper to get the victory. My God. How many rounds was this? 2, 4, 6, 8 rounds of the penalty kick shootout, and you win it 5-4. What in heaven's name is going on in Starfire?
Absolute madness. It's an instant Starfire classic as far as I'm concerned. Like, I'll admit, like, Louisville is a fantastic USL side, if not one of the best in USL, and they're always really fun to watch, but I don't know. In my eyes, I don't think the Sounders should have, like, let off the gas after the Musovski goal, which they definitely did, and they kind of let Louisville get into the game a little bit. But absolute madness in that entire match.
Absolutely. Now, I have to ask you this question. Has there been any form of unrest in the Seattle area? Because it sounds like there's a lot of – I don't know if there's a hint – or a loud grumbling against Brian Schmetzer right now, but do you think he's, you know, very close to maybe losing it, or do you think it's just a bump in the road?
I think leading up to this game, I think he was definitely in the hot seat, as much as all the other journals will say, or the Sounders FL, even Brian himself, they won't want to admit that, but I feel like the seat was definitely getting a little warm, and the team grinding out with this match and getting that win on the shootout, I think, helped him a little bit. And then obviously yesterday's win against the Timbers definitely saved his spot for the time being. I think that I'm not in the camp, but a lot of fans, whether they're on Twitter or actually the ones that are going to the games or people that I've talked to or listened to, they are definitely in the camp where they think that Brian should be on his way out. I don't think he should be, personally, but if the results don't come, a decision kind of has to be made.
Yeah. No, I understand that. I mean, he's done so well for the Sounders. I mean, my goodness, you know, got you your first MLS Cup championship, the first MLS club to win the CONCACAF Champions League. I mean, the club's going to the FIFA Club World Cup next summer. I mean, there's tons and tons of, you know, accolades that Schmetzer has done for the club. And it's just really tough to see them cutting away from him like this.
Oh, agreed. And I, like I said, I don't think his time is up just yet. I expect a team, once they're fully healthy and once he decides to tweak his tactics a little bit, which we did see in the Philadelphia game, and we saw success with that, if he can adapt the players and adapt his tactics a little bit, I think he'll be safe for at least a couple more years.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see what happens, though. So let's talk about the Phoenix Rising. That's your next opponent in the Open Cup in the round of 16, the fifth round. So tell me, what do you worry about Phoenix, but what do you think Seattle can do against them back at Starfire?
So Phoenix, actually, so a little background before I get into the actual match. Phoenix is a little close to my heart. I am Native American, and they actually play on my reservation, and they're technically like my hometown team, so to speak. So this is definitely like, this match alone makes me super excited to be able to see like my favorite team with the Sounders and my hometown team with Phoenix Rising. There's a lot more to it, but I'm definitely, for when it comes to Phoenix Rising, they've also been really fun to watch. They won the USL Championship last season. And their goalkeeper, Rocco, I think he has qualities, and unless the Sounders actually pressure him and get shots off, I can see this going into extra time again.
Uh-oh. Extra time. That's not good.
No. And luckily with this last game against Louisville, like, the Sounders did well in extra time. They held on tight, but I don't want to see extra time again. I do that. I want to see them put it away fast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll see what happens moving forward. But I will say this. I know it's been a long, long time since the Sounders beat the Timbers, whether it be in Portland or back at Lumen Field. But, Raul Ruiz Diaz, you guys were sorely missing him that badly, weren't you?
Yes, we were. And I feel like when it comes to going to the round of 16 and forward with the Open Cup, I think we should be playing some more of our first team players. Good to get the kids game time, but like, this is now, if the Sounders aren't going to be able to compete for Supporters Shield, which I don't think they will, I think we should go all in on Open Cup.
Absolutely. And we'll see what happens moving on forward there. And it should be a lot of fun. Anyway, Michael, thank you for joining me tonight. I know you and Jeremy do a great job with Cascadia FC. For the Cascadia soccer fans out there, of course, so all as well as covering Vancouver. Thanks for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. And good luck in the fifth round.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. And I just wanted to say one last thing. Your show has been fantastic so far. I've listened to every bit of it. And I love your rants on U.S. soccer and MLS. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Listen, look, we can't have a fractured U.S. soccer here. They have to step up, and they got to do what they got to do to make it whole if they can. If not, then we're lost. That's all I can say. But thank you as always for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Michael Martinez from Cascadia FC, covering the Seattle Sounders, as we are going to have some fun here more times here on the Open Cup shows and, of course, here on the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer shows. Let's go ahead and give you the schedule for the round of 16. Of course, that is the fifth round of the U.S. Open Cup. On Tuesday, May the 21st, Charleston Battery hosting Atlanta United at Patriots Point Soccer Stadium in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina at 7 p.m. Eastern. New York City FC 2 taking on New Mexico United at Belson Stadium on the campus of St. John's in Queens, New York at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Sporting Kansas City hosting FC Tulsa at Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City, Kansas at 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central. And then the two late-nighters, Sacramento Republic hosting San Jose Earthquakes at Heart Health Park in Sacramento, California at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. LAFC hosting Loudoun United FC at BMO Stadium in downtown L.A., 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. And on Wednesday, May 22nd, Indy 11 hosting Detroit City FC at the Mike at 7 o'clock Eastern. Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting FC Dallas at Allianz Stadium in St. Petersburg, Florida. That's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And finally, Seattle Sounders hosting Phoenix Rising FC at Starfire Sports Complex in Tukwila, Washington. That's at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. And you'll find out when and where the matches will be streamed on from U.S. Soccer as well. I want to thank my guests tonight. I want to thank, once again, Matthew Cox, Unused Subs Podcast, Dell Schaefer's Charleston Battery Podcast, Thad, Kansas City Soccer Journal, excuse me, Brett Mullenix, Indianapolis native, also from the USL show, and of course Michael Martinez from Cascadia FC. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me tomorrow night for another regular Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. And this Thursday, we will make up that NPSL soccer show from last Thursday due to the technical difficulties. Can't wait to have my guests back on there. As always, please, thank you for listening to me tonight. And as always, please, as always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care. So long, and have a good night. And talk to you tomorrow night. Bye-bye for now, everybody.